Hallo, willkommen bei The Block of Rock, deinem Hardrock und Heavy Metal Podcast Musikmagazin. Ich bin Uwe Lerch und ich nehme dich Backstage mit zu den Rockstars. Natürlich quatschen wir über die Musik, die uns alle verbindet, über neue Platten, über Livepläne und was früher so war. Aber wir sprechen auch über die Menschen dahinter. Was hat sie inspiriert und motiviert und welche Rockstar-Tipps haben sie für dich da draußen? In den Shownotes, das ist die Beschreibung zu dieser Episode, über die du das hier gerade hörst, findest du einen zentralen Link für alle weiteren Informationen, der dich aber auch in meine offizielle Facebook-Gruppe führt. Ich würde mich freuen, wenn wir uns hier kennenlernen. Bist du nun am Start? Na dann komm doch mit! In der heutigen Episode geht es einmal mehr um Joe Bonamassa, dem laut Guitar World Magazin größten Blues-Gitarristen der Welt. Joe zählt zudem auch zu den fleißigsten Musikern, der einen unglaublichen Output hat, fast vergleichbar wie Robert Lewandowski oder Erling Haaland Tore schießen. Mit Mitte 40 hat Bonamassa bereits weit über 40 Studio- und Live-Alben veröffentlicht, allesamt in exzellenter Qualität. Zuletzt hatten wir ihn zu seinem mit britischen Blueswurzeln geerdeten Album Royalty getroffen, welches er in den Londoner Abbey Road Studios aufgenommen hatte. Hier hatte er aber schon angekündigt, dass die nächste Platte New York Style werden würde und diese liegt nun mit Time Clocks vor, welche mal gleich die deutschen Albumcharts erstürmt hat. Es war also wieder mal Zeit für einen neuen Plausch mit dem Meister, den ich in einer musikalischen Midlife-Crisis erwischte. Also hört gut zu. Hallo Joe, wie geht's? Du bist ja schon wieder fleißig gewesen. Wenn du dir das letzte Jahr noch einmal vor Augen führst, was hat dich hier am meisten bewegt oder beschäftigt?
I've learned two things since we were kind of put into semi-retirement 15 months ago. As a musician, I've learned that I'm not a guitar player, I'm not a singer, I'm not a songwriter. I'm an entertainer. Because what I do requires an audience. I don't sit at home and play all day. I don't sit at home and make videos for social media. To me, I require a live audience, and I feel like I'm best if I have a live audience. If you take the live audience away, my whole world kind of topples down like a house of cards. What I've learned, what's moved me and driven me the most in the last year is the fact that we've been able to raise over $600,000 for bands and musicians that have been really affected by the shutdown. And we've given away, you know, all of that money and we're still raising money. And that's really driven me. The philanthropy has really driven me and it gave me a new passion. And, you know, so far Keeping the Blues Alive Foundation's raised over $1.5 million for music in schools and now our Fueling Musicians program, which both are very, very worthwhile causes.
Erst letztes Jahr hast du uns ja alle auf eine Tasse Royalty eingeladen. Dein gleichnamiges Album hat es bei uns in Deutschland in die Top 5 geschafft. Warst du über diese Reaktion auch ein Stück selbst überrascht?
I was very happy that people understood the concept of royalty. I was very happy the fact that we went to London, recorded at Abbey Road, made it sound like it was recorded in the UK, made a very English sounding record and people got it. It would have disappointed me if, like, you know, went over there and we did it twice and people go, oh, it sounds like an Americana record. I'm like, no, no, it was really made in England for that reason, is to kind of like have all that culture and history of the studio and living in the town kind of just permeate into the music.
Jetzt bist du zurück mit deinem neuen Album Time Clocks, welches aus meiner Sicht sehr vielschichtig ist. Einerseits erinnert es mich an deine 70s Heavy Rock Phase, die du ja auch schon mal mit deiner Band Black Country Communion ausgelebt hast. Andererseits klingt es aber auch sehr modern mit vielen aktuellen Themen. Erzähl uns doch mal mehr vom Konzept.
Time Clocks is for me a record that is an extension of Royalty in the sense that the song Time Clocks was written for Royalty, but I forgot about it because we attempted Royalty twice, once in July of 2019 and then again in January 2020 because our drummer Anton Figg broke his ankle, and all the songs that I'd written in July got put into a playlist except for one, which was Time Clocks. And then when I saw that I missed that song, I resubmitted it. and it became the title track. And it was actually the right track for this record, not for our previous album. So, you know, the whole thing about time clocks, it really is the passage of time personified, because I'm here doing this interview at 44 years old. I can blink an eye and remember my 40th birthday. I can also blink an eye and I'll be 45. So a half a decade has passed, and it doesn't seem like a long stretch of time. So I guess that happens to everybody as you get older. But I wanted to address that in terms of my own life and my own career and my own music.
Lustig, dass du gerade deinen 40. Geburtstag ansprichst. Am Vorabend hast du eine Show in Münster, Westfalen gehabt, bei der ich auch zu Gast war. Du hast quasi deinen letzten Abend als 30er mit deinen Fans gefeiert und auch auf der Bühne auf diesen Jahresprung hin zum 40er hingewiesen. Aber lassen wir doch die Zeit mal nach vorne ticken. Auf Time Clock singst du über dein Leben on the road. Was hat sich mit Blick auf die Pandemie hier für dich verändert und was vermisst du vor allem?
That's a good question. And it's not just me. The thing about having something so familiar being taken away. It's not playing shows, it's not playing guitar, it's not writing songs, not making music, it's not posting stupid pictures on Instagram. It's travel. The fact that you couldn't travel. And one of the things that I love about my job the most is I'm paid to travel. And I have friends all over the world. And it's not the same through a lens. It's not the same on FaceTime. It's not the same on a Zoom call. The interactions of people is what I miss the most. The camaraderie, the conversations that come from being in a room with a bunch of eccentric characters, you know, in some bar in Amsterdam. That, to me, is worth living. You can't recreate that. You can't substitute that for something else. So having the finality, and now it's so rare that people do get together, but it's starting to come back. You know, the fact that it's coming back in a certain way, and you're like, well, that kind of feels weird, because we took it for granted for our whole lives. So we'll see what happens.
Time Clocks ist ein äußerst dynamisches, aber auch ebenso besinnliches Album geworden. Die 10 Songs zeichnen sich durch ein hohes Maß an Dringlichkeit, Aufbruch, Zuversicht, aber auch Rückblick, Augenmaß und eine gewisse Vorsicht aus. Sind das die Zeichen der Zeit?
The thing about this record is it could best be described as a midlife crisis musically. What you see is someone who's done a lot of stuff in his past. I know it works, I know it doesn't work. And you're asking the question to yourself, and a lot of people ask the same question to themselves, what's next? Is this it for me? Is my best days behind me? Am I going to be the John Henry guy for the rest of my life? Is there better? And one of the cool things about the last two records, as we start to scale the tour, go back out on the road, the new songs from the last two albums, when we play them live, they come across bigger and better, and the audience responds more than to stuff that we've done in the past. That tells me that the writing's gotten stronger. That tells me that the message and the view of the albums and how people are consuming it is working. So that I'm excited about and excited to get back and playing. And now we have two full albums that we've never toured, and we're spoiled for choice for material, which will be good.
Um noch eine Spur tiefer zu gehen. Time Clocks besticht auch durch ein hohes Maß an Erfahrung, Selbstbewusstsein und dennoch spüre ich hier zwischen den Tönen einen enormen Drang nach Neuem und Abenteuer.
Well, I never sit still. I never sat still for anyone or anything. And every 2 weeks I get antsy and I just, to me, it's like you search for something else. It's, having musical ADD has been a blessing and a curse for me, because I don't know how to just stick to one thing. I don't really dive in and stay there. I just kind of test the waters and move on, and then move on to something else, and then, you know, look back. I mean, if you look at all the side projects I've done, from Black Country Communion to the stuff we did with Beth and Rock Candy Funk Party, and now that I'm producing records, there's a nomadic theme that goes through all of that, and I think this record probably is the first one in a long time that's expressed those views, or at least my feelings about it.
Du bist bekannt für dein einzigartiges, gefühlvolles, aber auch gleichzeitig sehr kraftvolles Gitarrenspiel. Bitte korrigier mich hier, wenn ich falsch liege, aber ich hatte bei dem kompletten Album das Gefühl, dass deine 6 Saiten auf Time Clocks etwas intensiver und eindringlicher rüberkommen.
Well, on this record I try to divide by 2. At this age I don't really have a lot to prove anymore, as far as like, well, I can play fast. I can jam a whole lot of notes that don't have to be there into a short phrase. I wanted to, what I played would be intense, emotional, and effective. If, to me, the solos did not meet that mark, then we redo the solos, you know, or the guitar playing, or just the song in general. So I want it to be effective and emotional and say something. And that's just a learning curve. I mean, that's just 10,000 hours and 10,000 records.
Magst du uns mal mehr über das fantastische Album-Artwork erzählen, das von dem bekannten Grafiker Hugh Syme geschaffen wurde?
I've been a fan of Hugh's forever. I mean, I love the stuff he did with Dream Theater and Rush. The whole album felt a little more proggy to me, and I wanted to do a more generalized concept of the art, you know, and Kevin and I talked about it, and he was the one that brought up Hugh doing the artwork, and I'm like, that's a great idea, because I just didn't want that same treatment to Time Clocks as, you know, a lot of albums that I've done, and here's me, you know, against a brick wall holding a guitar, and, you know, like, how many ways, different ways can you hold a fucking guitar? You know, let's do something different. So that was pretty much, I think that was a phone call that I made. It's like, how many different ways do I have to be made to hold the same fucking guitar? Let's try something new. So that's basically what happened.
Lass uns doch mal die neue Platte komplett durchgehen. Magst du uns mal durch die einzelnen Songs führen? Fangen wir doch mal an mit Notches.
Notches, a song I wrote with my friend Charlie Starr from a band called Blackberry Smoke. Charlie had this great line. You know, I got miles under my wheels, notches in my walking cane. So I kind of came in with this kind of Ali Farka Touré 12-string riff. And it's an odd structure of a song, but it works. And it's got that big chorus. And it just says it all. I got miles under my wheels, notches in my walking cane. That's what you feel like when you're 44. It'll happen to you.
Weiter geht's mit dem bluesigen The Heart That Never Waits.
This is a song that I wrote with James House. I really love Robert Cray. And I wanted to write kind of a Robert Cray song with a chorus. And obviously I can't sing like Robert or can't play like Robert, but it's my little tip of the hat to someone who's been super nice to me and encouraging over the years, but also a musical hero of mine.
Nächster Song ist Time Clocks, sehr episch. Das wird sicher eine Live-Hymne auf der nächsten Tour.
The title track. I'm glad I went through my voice memos and found this thing called TC Demo. I was like, what's TC Demo? It turned out to be this little demo I did at the hotel in London 2 years ago. And I forgot to submit it for the album Royal T. It's got a big chorus and it's a unique song. And some people see it as Americana. I go, man, that sounds very English to me. But they could see it as Latvian polka for all I care, as long as they like it. I think it's a good song. I think it's one of the better songs I've written in a while.
Beim folgenden Track geht es Questions and Answers. Welche Fragen werden denn hier beantwortet?
It's a very classic blues, and I like the yin and yang aspect of it. It's like, why do you have to be so mean, woman? That's the hard truth and the hard question. Then the answer is this kind of whimsical, you know, well, tells you why. I just like the way that flows, and it's a fun song to play, and I look forward to playing that one live a lot.
Mit Mind's Eye geht's dann etwas ruhiger weiter.
Mind's Eye, that's one of the big songs, the ballad that I wrote with my friend James House. And it's about keeping things in perspective. It's about understanding the peripheries of life. Like, what do you see on your left? What do you see on your right? When you're laser focused and obsessed with something, sometimes you don't see the broadside and the periphery. And you could be very broadsided, like I was a few years ago, and your whole personal life could crumble an instant. And that's me addressing my lack of seeing that happen and seeing the warning signs of that happen.
Auf dem nächsten Stück nimmst du uns auf eine Zeitreise in die frühen 70er, als der Led Zeppelin der höchste Stern am Rockfirmament war.
Curtain Call. Well, we always got to have an obligatory tip of the hat to Zeppelin, it seems like, Kevin and I. That's just, you know, one of the things is when you're writing songs based on the notion that you could never, you might not be able to play them live again. You know, it's like, well, that may have been it. Milwaukee may have been it. The last time I played in front of people before this year was Milwaukee in 2020. It was a good show. And one of the things that kept me sane was, they always say you're only as good as your last show. Well, at this point, I guess we were pretty good. So that was me addressing the notion of the finality of my career, which could be still. This is not obligatory. They can kick me out and take my guitar license away at any point.
Der nächste Song, The Loyal Kind, hätte auch gut auf deinem letzten Album sein können. Was ist hier die Geschichte?
The Loyal Kind is a song that I wrote with Bernie Marsden for Royal T. And we didn't get to it because we had too many songs to cut for Royal T. And we decided to leave it for the follow-up because, again, we planned on making a 2-record set. It was Royal T and then whatever Time Clocks was going to be. And I think The Loyal Kind is better on this record than if it would have been on Royalty. It was a bit redundant on that record. This one, it sticks out more. And I think having more experience and seeing it from a different perspective made us a lot more conscious of making that song special.
Worum geht's bei Hanging on a Loser? Ich höre einen sehr spitzen Unterton.
Hanging on a Loser, a song I wrote with my friend Tom Hambridge. It bears to ask the question, you know, if everything is so bad, then why are you hanging on a loser like me? I just like the way that rolls off the tongue, because I wanted to say that so many times in my life, I can't even tell you. Is that bad? What are you doing hanging around with me? Says it all. Ain't that the blues?
Kommen wir zum finalen Song auf dem Album.
Known Unknowns. I borrowed that from the late Don Rumsfeld. He used to be the defense secretary, among other things, for this country. I just like this concept of, you know, the unknown knowns, the known unknowns, the known knowns. Wordplay. But, you know, it's about life. And to me, it's like, all I know is what I don't know. We all have this feeling as musicians of an uncertainty and trepidation about moving forward, because everybody invested their whole lives into it. And it's not like you can just say, well, I just did music for 6 months and then I moved on to whatever. Everybody's invested. Everybody who's been in the game 30 years or more is pretty much invested and would probably have a hard time holding down a 9-to-5 day job. We're just not responsible people. This is why we do this, so we don't have to get up early and have a boss. That's why I do it. And I wrote that song with my friend Alyssa Bonagura. Not Bonamassa. Bonagura. Same amount of letters. Same Italian. Heritage. Different last name.
Danke dir. Jetzt sind wir alle durch. Was sind deine Lieblingssongs auf Time Clocks und warum?
My favorite song on Time Clocks is Notches. I just think it says it all about where I am in my life. Miles under my wheels, notches in my walking cane. Nobody gets out in mint condition. And I like that concept because everybody makes mistakes, everybody gets knocked around, but what doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Sag mal, Joe, du bist ja nah dran. Wie steht's um die Blues-Szene im Jahr 2021?
You know, I think music is in good shape right now, not just the blues. I think you see a lot of young people who have extraordinary ability in playing music. They're way more advanced than people of my generation. And I thought about that. I was like, well, what's going on? Is this like this some generation of super humanoids that naturally talented? I said, there's probably some of that. And I said, but there's also, you know, nobody now is taking a cassette deck and rewinding it 100,000 times to learn, you know, Cliffs of Dover note for note, or Jimi Hendrix, and then realizing that the solo on Are You Experienced is in reverse. There you go. That's online now.
Sag mal, beobachtest du auch die aktuellen Entwicklungen und neue Acts? Wie nimmst du denn das momentane Geschehen selbst wahr?
The music scene is how you make it. I look at the music business right now kind of how it was like in the 50s. Everybody's on their own. Everybody's making singles, not albums. Everybody's starting their own label. You know, not really working through the major label chain. It's not so critical that you're signed to a major label now to get noticed. They're using social media to market. There is a notion where, you know, to make a video, it must go viral or else it's a failure. I don't really subscribe to that. If you make a video that means something to you, but yet it doesn't go viral, it's still a good video. You can go on any of your social media outlets and see videos of people standing on milk crates, falling on their ass and killing themselves, and they got 15 million views. Doesn't mean that that video is better than yours. Just remember that.
In den USA sind ja aktuell viele Acts schon wieder auf Tour. Hier in Europa hoffen wir, dass es Anfang 22 auch endlich wieder losgeht. Was kannst du uns über die nächste Tour jetzt schon verraten? Ab Mitte April bist du ja hier auf Reisen.
Well, we're looking forward to playing in Europe. It'll be 3 years since we've been there. Seems odd, because we'd always go every year. I'm excited, you know, because a lot of times people ask me, like, well, what's your favorite kind of audience? Right now, people. Doesn't matter where they are. Europe, Ohio, Australia, people. People going to come out and see us? Let's boogie. So I'm excited. And the show's going to be great. We have 2 new albums to tour on that we haven't toured on before, so there's going to be a lot of new songs. You know, different format of the band, and we're looking forward to it.
Wenn dir diese Episode gefallen hat, folge mir doch gerne beim Podcast-Dealer deines Vertrauens, damit du auch die nächste Folge nicht verpasst. Du bekommst die ganze Staffel als kostenloses Abo unter anderem bei Spotify, Apple Podcast, Amazon Music, Deezer, Soundcloud, YouTube, dem Podcast-Portal von Google oder natürlich über meine Homepage theblogofrock.com. Höre dir dort auch die bereits veröffentlichten Stories an, denn jede Woche gibt es hier neues Futter. Und vor allem, erzähle es deinen Freunden und teile die frohe Kunde auf Social Media. Alles klar? Dann hören wir uns ja wieder beim nächsten Mal. Bis dahin, keep on rockin'!